Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the IOWomen.com podcast. I'm Danielle Bernstein. In this week's podcast, I talk with former Georgetown star and current CBS Sports Network analyst Sheehan Stanwyck-Birch. Sheehan will be on the call for the Big East Championship game, which is this Saturday at 1 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network. Sheehan talks in the podcast about the Big East tournament, what to watch for, narrows down her top five finalists for the Tuaratan Trophy, and looks ahead at some of the other conference tournaments that will determine who makes this year's NCAA tournament. Start off with the Big East tournament. I know that CBS Sports is going to be there for the championship game on Saturday. I wanted to get your thoughts on each of the matchups, Syracuse versus UConn and Loyola versus Georgetown, obviously two matchups we've seen in the regular season. What are some of the things that you're looking to in each of these matchups, whether it's individual matchups, the play of specific players? What are some of the things to look for in each of these games?
Well, unfortunately, the Big East, as we know it, will no longer be after this year. So I think this is going to be a really exciting tournament with the teams in it from top to bottom. I think the Big East this year has been the most competitive. And obviously, Syracuse leads the way, but Syracuse has won the regular season before and not come away with this Big East championship title that'll give the automatic bid. So I think Syracuse, on their undefeated streak, is the favorite to win it. I think they know what's on the line. This is the last time the program will be in the Big East, so I know they want to go out on a high note. But, you know, they've got a target on their backs because a lot of the UConn, Loyola, and Georgetown are all fighting for an at-large bid if they don't win that AQ. And I think they all have a legitimate shot in getting into the NCAA tournament, which is huge for the conference. But, I'm really interested. I think this will be a very close matchup. UConn is having one of their best seasons ever, really historic season for them. It'll be their first appearance ever in the Big East tournament, so that is great. They are led by an awesome senior class that their goal has been to be in this Big East championship. So once the regular season's over, and, you know, I think once conference tournaments start, the schedule is completely wiped clean, and I don't think that's really a cliche, because, you know, the results that we've seen over the years, there's lots of upsets that happen. So I think it'll be a very tough battle. I'm excited to see the Syracuse and UConn match. I do think Syracuse will prevail. Their offense just is so powerful, and so many people that can score even in the absence of Michelle Tumalo. And, you know, the Loyola and Georgetown matchup, they're a very familiar team, and Loyola has won back-to-back Big East championship titles. So and their first one was done on the Georgetown's turf. So I know that they have had somewhat of a disappointing season so far this year and are looking to really rebound. Georgetown won the earlier matchup in the season, but Loyola's come strong. I think the biggest problem that Loyola's had is they've got a lot of their offense back from last year, but their scoring just overall is down, and I don't think anyone really expected that coming into the season. Georgetown has had a great year, and they've had kind of the similar struggles that we've seen them in their losses when they struggle with their shot selection and struggle in their goaltending play. So that, I think, will be a very interesting matchup. Biggest thing to look for, I think, is Georgetown's ride. They're holding their opponents are only clearing 60%. So it's going to come down to the fundamental draw controls and ground balls. And Georgetown's got a young class kind of leading them in scoring, not any veteran leaders out there with Carolyn Tarzian, a sophomore, leading the way.
And kind of wanted to elaborate on a couple of the things that you mentioned, starting with Loyola, who, as you said, have won the last two Big East tournament championships, and like you said, have struggled offensively. And I spoke with Jen Adams earlier in the year, and she even said, you know, coming in, I thought defense would have been an issue for us and a point of weakness because we lost so much personnel in the defensive end, and thought that the offense would be fantastic. And it's actually been the opposite, which I think has been surprising for a lot of people. Just when you have what they have returning, and to see it kind of struggle at times has been surprising. Do you think that they are kind of finding their way offensively? And do you think they can make a run similar to like they did last year, where they kind of surprised in the tournament and won their second championship?
I think so, definitely, because especially since it has been kind of an up and down year for them, but they still have the talent is there. And, you know, defense, which was the question mark really for them with the departure of Studhoff and Cage, now they've got freshman Molly Wolf, who's had a good year, and the defense surrounding her isn't the problem. It's more putting the numbers on the board, and that just becomes a matter of confidence. And last year, their freshman class really took charge, and even this year, that freshman class is now sophomores, and they have, you know, are controlling the majority of the scoring for Loyola. So I think, you know, with Annie Thomas and Sydney Thomas, I think that they will find a way. Marley Payton surely is a leader of that team, and they just need a couple things to go their way on the attacking end, and I think that they could definitely take charge. And the Loyola-Georgetown matchup, that's the toughest brawl of the two. I think that'll be the biggest battle. You know, I think they really put on the line. Not only, even though these teams might be safe with a loss in this Big East tournament, everyone wants to make it to the national championship. So you're not just fighting for a bid to the tournament, you're also just fighting for your placement in how the whole seeding is going to break down and potential for a home field advantage and everything. So I think everyone wants to go out on a high note. But Loyola, I mean, they have, in the years past when they've won the Big East championship, they weren't seeded number one. So they like that underdog role, and I think that suits them well.
Right. And you had also mentioned Syracuse's offense, the depth that they have, the amount of players who can put the ball in the back of the net, even in the absence of Michelle Tumulo, like you mentioned. Since her injury, how have you seen other players step up? I mean, just look, Alyssa Murray and Kayla Traynor have both been fantastic in those last four games. How have you kind of seen them rally without her in the lineup?
You're so right. You know, I saw the game when they played Cornell when Tumulo was injured, and the next game they had was against Notre Dame. And at that point, Notre Dame was, had just come off their big win streak and was starting their Big East play. They did suffer that loss to Loyola, but I would have thought Notre Dame was going to come on fire when they met Syracuse in the Dome, and they're playing without Michelle Tumulo. I was amazed the way that Syracuse attack responded. Alyssa Murray scored the first couple goals. She was on fire. Kayla Traynor was amazing. Becca Block defensively. As a team, they, you know, really rallied. And I didn't know, since Tumulo really dominated their whole offensive unit, especially for the past couple years, just really being the quarterback, I really thought that would take a while for other players to step in the role. And I didn't see really any adjustment factor. They just kind of rallied around her. She was the Tumulo was the emotional leader on the sidelines, and the rest of the players on the field just got, you know, the job done. I was the score of that Notre Dame Syracuse game. I think it was 11-8. It seemed a lot close. Was that it?
Yeah. Well, I would say maybe it was more in the first half. I kind of felt like they dominated. Notre Dame had to play from behind the entire time. I felt like they were constantly playing catch up.
Yes, and I think Syracuse could have definitely. What scared me about them, the only thing that scared me about Syracuse was that score should have been a lot higher than 11. They had many more chances to put the ball on the back of the net, but I thought defensively they were extremely impressive. And, you know, Notre Dame is a good team. I don't think that they were, I don't think they're at the level of Syracuse, though, at this point.
Right. And Michelle Tumulo going down this lane this year, I was so bummed when I read that. I mean, you never want to see a player be injured, and especially when it's a season-ending thing like that. But what she brings to that team, and even what she brings to Division I lacrosse as a whole, just her presence on the field and her competitive fire. I was just really, really bummed when I saw that, to see a senior miss the end of the season like that. I don't know.
Especially the way their season was going too. I mean, no one wants to have the knee injury. There's not an opportunity, I don't believe, for a medical red shirt or anything. So, you know, Syracuse was riding high. Everyone, you know, thought they would be back in the Final Four. And she was, you know, one of the big people that people were thinking might win the Twarden Award, and then she goes down, and I thought Syracuse was going to go down with her too. I mean, I really didn't realize how deep they were, and actually seeing Kayla Traynor play, they look remarkably similar, the way that Tumulo plays and Traynor plays. Just to me, in terms of the way they carry the stick, her presence behind the cage, Tumulo, not only did they lose her scoring power, but her, you know, ability to ride defensively and come away with some of the takeaway checks, sometimes get yellow carded for them, but oftentimes come up with the ball. It's so impressive. And, you know, I thought Traynor was doing, came away with a couple good takeaway checks, and it's a bummer that they don't have her on the field, but Gary Gates has done an excellent job of recruiting over the years, and they definitely have the depth there for people to score. Last year, you know, I felt like they were more effective shooting, like shooting over 50%. They're close to it this year, But as they start matching up with some of the better teams in the Big East this weekend and as they head into NCAA play, they're going to have to clean up some of the shot selection.
Right. And speaking of the Big East tournament, a team that will not be in the Big East tournament, Notre Dame, who is in an interesting situation in that they are not in their conference tournament but can still make the NCAA tournament. What are your thoughts on the Irish? Like you had mentioned before, got off to a hot start. We're one of the last few remaining unbeaten teams in Division I at one point and until they kind of struggled in conference play. What are kind of your predictions or thoughts on them going forward and their ability to win some games in the NCAA tournament?
They're a good team, and they're very well coached, as are many teams in Division I right now. Their schedule is too weak, and that is, you can't really, there's no crystal ball to that. You know, no one knew going into the year that some of the teams that they had on their schedule wouldn't necessarily be that strong. But they started out with a great 10 wins, and then they met Loyola and lost in overtime, but had a big win over Georgetown, and then had recently suffered with losses to Syracuse, UConn, and Northwestern. They played Northwestern tight. They're very talented. I just worry that if not having the tough schedule in the beginning of the year, is that going to hurt them in terms of the way that NCAA tournament selection comes down? And last year it did. They had kind of a similar run last year. Great start to the season against some not as strong opponents as their later season schedule. They suffered some losses at the end of the year, and then their first-round game goes up against Northwestern. Best news for Notre Dame is, one, the expanded tournament, because last year I think if you didn't make your conference tournament, there's not enough spots most likely for you to be in the NCAA. So, one, as you said, they look like they should have an at-large bid. But, two, I don't think that they will be probably matched up with a top-tier team. Now, it depends what happens with Northwestern. They very
right.
well could
geography.
So, depending on, how that all works out, but I think that's a problem, maybe something they're going to need to look for as they start to schedule their future years, trying to, get some better opponents earlier in the season, because one of the things that the committee looks at is the way you finish out your season and those late season losses. But they are, very talented, very impressed with Barb Sullivan for them, and, I think they can go far, but it's all going to come down to who they're paired up with.
Right. And moving away from the Big East a little bit and into the Tuareton Watch, last week the 25 nominees were released by the Tuareton Foundation. And looking at this list, obviously an impressive list of players, including last year's winner, Katie Schwarzman, and a couple finalists in Taylor Thorne and Michelle Tumalo, who unfortunately I think wouldn't be on that list of Final Five just because she's no longer playing. What are your thoughts overall on this list? Anybody you were surprised to see on there? Anybody you were surprised to not see on there? Overall thoughts on this group of 25 players?
I think that it's a great list. I don't agree with, every single selection. I think there's always players that are left out. I am a little surprised. I think Tumalo is by far one of the best players in the nation, but I'm surprised with her being hurt that she is still on the list. Not that she doesn't deserve it as one of the best players, but I feel like if you look at other sports, if somebody had gone down with an injury, like as in a Heisman, I don't know if that player would have been on the list. But
right.
That's not really a criticism to it because she is one of the top players, but I agree with you. I don't believe she'll be one of the top five. I think that Syracuse has a very good chance of walking away with the Tuareton Trophy still, even without Tumalo. Alyssa Murray and Becca Block are both on my short list of players to win it. I think Becca Block might be a long shot. Her stats just don't really show what her play is. And, I think when you watch her on the field, and she'll have a great stage at the Big East this weekend to show what a complete end-to-end player is. For her, I wish she would chip in a few more points on the offensive end. So, she could really be looked at as a Tuareton, a full, complete player. But I think I'm very impressed with her play. I think Murray, her goal-scoring ability and even, her ability to, her vision and feeding ability is great. And if they do well, I think as a Tuareton has shown us over the last couple of years, the players need to carry their team deep into the NCAA tournament. Florida, depending on how their season shakes out, I think somebody from their team is going to end up on the list for sure. Right now I've got Kitty Cullen being one of those finalists, but somebody from that senior class, that senior class is the first freshman class to come to Florida. They've got unfinished business, and right now Cullen leads the way, but it easily could be Brittany DeShiel or a number of people from them. But somebody's going to put that team on their back, and Maryland, what a dream season for them. So far undefeated, repeated ACC, and, you know, led by Katie Schwartzman and Alex Aust. I don't see how you don't put them on the Final Five list either.
I agree. I was a little surprised to not see Alyssa Leonard on there. I realize that the majority of her impact is on the draw, but she's stepped up certainly on the offensive end for them this season, and I was a little surprised to not see her on there. Your thoughts on her?
You know, I think she's amazing. We did for CBS Sports Network their Navy game, and she was phenomenal in the draw control and, you know, her overall play. She stepped up her offensive numbers as well. I think she is key to Northwestern success. So it will be interesting because, you know, last year she was a huge reason in terms of their late season performance and her ability to win the draw controls, which, as we all know, you know, can oftentimes end up dictating the scoreboard. So it is surprising to me, and I don't know all that goes into the Twardon list and if they have to break it down by different positions, if you can only have, you know, a certain number of people from each position, if it's done, how it's done by schools. So it's, you know, it's tough to have to weigh that, but I agree with you. I don't know if Leonard has been so key with them this year in terms of her draw controls. I mean, her numbers are staggering, but, you know, it may have to take them, you know, winning the national championship for people to realize and look back and say, gosh, like, Leonard was really the reason that they were able to have their run in the tournament.
Right. And also, when you think about draw controls, they have Taylor Thorne and Gabriella Flibbett on the circle, too, who also play a big role in their draw control abilities as well. So I realize it can be spread out a little bit, too. But she was just, I think, the first player who kind of stuck out to me. You kind of alluded to it a little bit, but who would your five be if you were given the option to choose the five finalists?
It's very fluid, I want to start out with saying.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I think it can change, you know, week by week, because I really do, I don't think this player needs to necessarily win the national championship, but I'd like to see the winner, you know, take their team deep into the NCAA tournament. So from Syracuse, Alyssa Murray and Becca Block. From Florida, it's going to be somebody, but right now I'd go with Kitty Cullen. And then Maryland, I'd give the nod to both Katie Schwartzman and Alex Aust. You know, I think with Schwartzman, you know, ACC player, again, her ability to just, you know, do it all, do everything her team needs, whether it's defensive duties or, you know, scoring when the focus is on her. But with Alex Aust, I mean, her numbers, I don't know how she can't be included in that short list with the season she's had so far.
Right. And I think Katie Schwartzman's, I think her defense is very underrated or just not talked about as much because of what she does on offense. But her ride and her hustle in the midfield and even playing in their settled defensive situation, she's amazing. And I feel like that part of her game kind of gets overlooked a little bit. So I would definitely see her being in that mix again as well. Moving on to, I guess, a little bit of some more conference tournament talk, but outside of the Big East, a couple other big tournaments going on, particularly the ALC and the Ivy League, both of which seem really interesting to me, obviously, because you have the big names like Florida and Northwestern and Penn State in the ALC, a team like Hopkins, who's essentially really fighting for a chance to be in the NCAA tournament, one of those teams that's right there on the bubble. And then the Ivy League, I feel like every year is in this position at the end of the season where you look at the tournament and you say any one of these teams could win the automatic qualifier. And Penn, which is hosting and won the regular season title, only beat each of the three other teams in the tournament, Cornell, Dartmouth, and Princeton, by one goal, and two of those were in overtime. So definitely seems like this is anybody's game. And all four of those teams sit really close in the RPI, so you have to think that the two that lose in the semifinals and the loser of the championship are kind of a little nervous on Selection Sunday. What are your thoughts, first starting off, I guess, with the Ivy League, and then we can move into the ALC, but things to watch in the Ivy League tournament?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the first thing is, at the beginning of the season when it was announced that there was going to be 26 teams in the tournament, I really thought that was great news for the Johns Hopkins of the world that's kind of been sitting on the outside looking in. I thought for sure, you know, with a season, you know, just looking ahead, I thought they would be in. And the same thing with the Ivy League, you know, with like the teams like Princeton, I thought, oh, this is great news for them. They'll definitely be in the tournament. And here we are, you know, at the beginning of May, and it looks like a lot of these teams are on the bubble, even with the expanded tournament. So
right.
That speaks a lot to, one, just how many great teams there are, but just how you can't take anything for granted. You know, a couple early season losses can really come down to haunt you. But with the Ivy League, I agree with you completely. I mean, it is crazy how each year it is like one goal games between all these people. Penn has been the kind of the big guy in the tournament who everyone's worried about. But then even though they've hosted, this will be their fourth year hosting the tournament, it's gone to, the title's gone to different people. You know, last year Dartmouth came away with a title in 2012 for the AQ bid. I don't really know how this play will all shake out, because all of these teams have kind of had up and down years. Everyone was kind of, you know, Penn started the season, couple losses, they've rebounded, and it just is like each one has kind of traded good win, good loss, or good win, bad loss throughout the year. So I think it'll be a real close one. And these, the Ivy, I think just with the history of all the teams, it doesn't really matter what the talent level is or how your seasons have gone. These games always seem to be super close. You know, obviously having home field advantage gives Penn a little bit of a nod, but, you know, other people have come into their turf and won as well. So they are all, you know, legitimately fighting for NCAA hopes. So this will be, I'm very excited to see how those will all turn out.
Right.
Cornell, I know Cornell's had a good season, and they've kind of fought everybody very close. I did see their Syracuse game, which was probably not the game to watch, and I was not. They had a lot of things to work on. Syracuse is one of those teams that can show you that. that might have been a blessing in disguise,
right,
if they can put everything back together.
Yeah, I was definitely on the Cornell bandwagon early in the season when they had that Penn State win. They played North Carolina to a goal, and I thought they were the real deal, and then after that kind of went downhill a little bit. So I'm definitely interested to see what comes out of the Ivy League tournament. The ALC also seems interesting to me, but I think some of that is just because, like I said, you know, having Florida and Northwestern in that league, and then Penn State, who's played really well all season. What are you looking for in the ALC tournament? Like you mentioned before, Hopkins fighting kind of for their playoff lives. And if we see another Florida-Northwestern matchup, Mandy O'Leary said in the ALC conference call, she's like, I think that the stars kind of aligned for us in that first game when they won 22-4, and she didn't expect that to be the case if they were to meet each other again. What are you looking for throughout the week in the ALC tournament?
Well, you know, the ALC is one of those conferences, one of the few that all of the teams get to make it into their conference play, which is, you know, a huge blessing, because even Vanderbilt, who's had a, you know, not great season at all, going 2-14 on the year, they could still make it into the NCAA tournament. So I think that's something really cool about that conference, that even though Florida and Northwestern kind of the showstoppers and steal a lot of the press, that anything can happen. And, you know, earlier in the season, even though Florida just dominated Northwestern, and, you know, shooting like something, an insane 80-some percent against them, was beat by Penn State. So it can be, you know, anyone's game. You think that whole Johns Hopkins, they'll play Ohio State in the first round. They just played a few days ago, and Hopkins just won by a goal. You know, looking at that box score, Hopkins dominated, outdrawled them, outshot them. Looks like Hopkins should have pulled away with more, but that's always a close battle. And then, you know, just a few weeks ago, Penn State only beat Hopkins by one goal. So I think those battles of those three teams will be, you know, very interesting. I do think we'll see a Florida-Northwestern matchup. I would agree with Mandy that, you know, they probably won't be the same case. But that being said, I think Florida is extremely strong. I don't know if Northwestern has the ability to shut Florida down. You know, I still think Florida will end up coming away with a win. I don't know if it will be as decisive as that 22-4 earlier season victory.
Yeah, I was shocked by that. And kind of actually while we're on the topic, want to get your thoughts on Northwestern, because I get asked this a lot. I get asked, so do you think Northwestern's going to the national championship again? And I feel silly saying no, because they've won 7 of the last 8, and I feel like you can't ever rule them out, because Kelly always has them somehow playing their best lacrosse at the end of the season. But what are your thoughts on them? They seem like a very different team than they've been in the past. And I really do think that this year it's going to be either Florida or Maryland. I think those two teams are kind of above everybody else, but I never want to say that definitively, because there's Northwestern, who's won 7 of the last 8, and everyone will be quick to bring that up, especially when we watch and they do it all over again or something like that. What are your thoughts on Northwestern this year?
I think you can never count them out, because they are, you know, Kelly Monty Hiller always finds a way to put them in a position to win, and a lot of times these some of the struggles that they have, and they rarely do have struggles, but they're able to come away with better ways to be more efficient and win. It'll all be up to, I think, depending on the way they get seated with people. You know, with their space guard specialist, Kerry Harrington, if they go up against a team that has, you know, a goal scorer that's used to scoring, you know, 5 goals a game that they rely on a lot, then they all of a sudden are in a position to win. Now, if they're matched up with somebody like a Florida or even a Syracuse, I think that there's too many people out there that at this point in the season have now showed themselves that, you know, it could be multiple 5-goal scorers on a team. But if they, you know, if they're up against somebody that has most of their offenses on one player, then they're okay. I think Erin Fitzgerald for Northwestern is very good. I don't know if she has the ability to really take over the game as much as some of their past Northwestern stars with Shannon Smith and Katrina Dowd and, you know, some of the likes of the other names that they've had over the years that really in tournament time, and Northwestern always does seem to have some player in NCAA tournament time that comes out of the woodwork and, you know, shines and plays amazing. But this will be very interesting to see how they end up getting seated and how the whole new expanded tournament plays out with where they'll fall in the NCAA tournament. I do think they're good. I don't think they're as good as in years past. That doesn't mean they can't win. Right now, I would put them not in the Final Four. I would have Maryland, Syracuse, Florida, and probably UNC in that Final Four mix. But, you know, as you said, the second you count them out, they'll be back in there.
Right. I think that's kind of exactly what I was looking for. I don't think they're as good as they've been in years past, but you can't rule them out. And because I agree with that, and I think I just needed to hear somebody else say it, I guess. I don't know. And then finally, one last thing. With the expanded tournament this year, what are you looking forward to most in the NCAA tournament? The first round to me almost seems like, with that being that Friday-Sunday, almost seems a little reminiscent of like the NCAA basketball tournament, where those first two rounds are so exciting and potential for upsets and that sort of a thing. What are you most looking forward to as the NCAA tournament gets underway?
You know, what I think, just seeing some new names in the tournament, and I think that'll be really great. You know, just with the expanded tournament, you've got 13 automatic qualifiers, which is great, but it also leaves that 13 at-large bids that might get some more familiar faces into the tournament and have some of those upsets. You know, I think I was able to see UMass play over the weekend at the A-10 championship. They got the AQ, and although they're not new to coming into the NCAA tournament, I think it'll be great because they should be able to get themselves in a position the way the whole tournament breaks down and, you know, maybe cause some waves and advance a little bit further where you're not going against the same old teams, where I think some of the better teams are able to get very familiar. And now you're all of a sudden, when they get to the tournament time, everyone's more on an even playing field because they're going to have to re-scout teams. They may not have seen them play 2 or 3 times. It's not going to be the same, you know, Virginia meeting Maryland matchup that may have happened 2 or 3 times that season, you know.
Right.
or seeing them in fall ball and everything else. So I'm hoping that we see some different teams shine and, you know, help their programs get some publicity. I think, you know, we'll probably end up with the Final Four teams being one of the ones that have been featured all season long, but I think it'll be an interesting road to watch.
Yeah, I completely agree. And regardless of what happens, having those other teams in the tournament is certainly great for the growth of the sport, particularly in some non-traditional hotbeds. I mean, Jacksonville making the tournament, I think, is great, especially for a new program. High Point, you know, teams like that, like you said, new names in the tournament is always great. Well, I think that should do it for the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate the time and the insight. It was awesome talking to you.
Likewise, I'm looking forward to having you on the show on Saturday.
I am very excited. Thank you very much, and I will see you Saturday. Again, Big East Championship Saturday at 1 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network. Thanks again, Sheehan, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, great.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.